everyone. This is JJ, the co-founder of Good Pods. If you haven't heard of it yet, Good Pods is like Goodreads or Instagram, but for podcasts. It's new, it's social, it's different, and it's growing really fast. There are more than 2 million podcasts, and we know that it is impossible to figure out what to listen to. On Good Pods, you follow your friends and podcasters to see what they like. That is the number one way to discover new shows and episodes. You can find Good Pods on the web or download the app. Happy listening.
All right, and welcome into a special episode of Fantasy Football with Gumbo. My name is Ja, and today I'm actually doing something a little bit different. I'm going to go ahead and talk about some of my favorite sleepers for week 5 of the fantasy football season. I'm going to go ahead and talk about some guys who I think might be droppable. You know, some people who may not have performed up to par through the first 4 weeks. I got some really interesting names on that list that I think y'all are going to be excited to hear about, for better or for worse. And I'm going to go ahead and try to give you guys some insight, some direct insight for specific players that can either help your fantasy team or, you know, they might be hurting your fantasy team and it could be around the time in which you want to consider dropping them off of your rosters. So I'm going to start in Kansas City and I'm going to talk about someone who I believe is going to be a sleeper potentially for the rest of the season. Someone who's not really being discussed. And I think they have a little bit of upside. And, you know, when I say upside, I'm talking about maybe a wide receiver 3, maybe a pretty solid flex. But I'm talking about Juju Smith-Schuster, wide receiver for the Kansas City Chiefs. As you know, Rashee Rice has been, he's been injured. We don't know how long he's going to be out. A lot of people are saying that they assume he might be out with an ACL injury. If it was an ACL, he's going to miss probably the rest of the season. So when it comes to Juju and Rashee Rice, they're a little bit similar. Both guys are kind of known for their ability to make contested catches and excel, you know, with the run after the catch. They're both physical receivers who break tackles and, you know, once again, they gain those extra yards. They both play as obviously wide receivers and both have kind of relied upon or they've been relied upon in the past to fill a void left by other key players. If you don't remember back in 2022, Juju Smith-Schuster stepped up after Tyreek Hill left. And Rashee Rice in 2023 stepped up after the Chiefs had no one left outside of Travis Kelce. So Juju is no stranger to stepping in when the Chiefs lose their number one receiver. That's how he excelled in 2022. 2022, they obviously won the Super Bowl. Juju was a large part of that. And I don't see there being really any differences here. I think that he's going to go ahead and fill that possession role that Rashee Rice filled. Rashee Rice really worked in the middle of the field. He was someone who got catches, you know, about 10 yards after the line of scrimmage. Just kind of moved the chains. He was a move the chain guy. And his yards after the catch ability was so special that he would gain extra yards after, which is what boosted him to his ranking as a top 10 receiver. Juju Smith-Schuster damn near does the same thing. He may not be as good as Rashee Rice. Rashee Rice is a little bit faster, a little more elusive, quicker on his feet. But Juju Smith Schuster is only 27 years old. He's still a physical receiver. He's actually pretty good with run blocking as well. But he doesn't mind getting his hands dirty, doing the dirty work. And I think Mahomes is going to be forced to go ahead and give him opportunity. Xavier Worthy is not a possession receiver. There's some of y'all out there saying that, hey, I think Xavier Worthy is going to be a monster. And don't get me wrong, he might get a couple more opportunities, but he's not the type of receiver that's going to go ahead and get 10, 12 targets a game. Justin Watson serves the role that Hollywood Brown was supposed to serve. Hollywood Brown was a receiver who stretches the field. He runs a lot of fly routes. He opens up the field so Patrick Mahomes and, you know, that Andy Reid offense can work underneath. Whether it be working underneath with Rashee Rice, whether it be working underneath with Travis Kelce, or just running the rock with Pacheco or whoever their respective running back is at the time. So Justin Watson's going to remain a field stretcher. His role will remain the same. He's not necessarily a volume play, and Rashee Rice was a volume play. Xavier Worthy just doesn't have the frame to target him 10, 12 times a game. If you do that, you're really going to be risking injury, and if you do that, he's not going to make it through the season healthy. Travis Kelce is obviously a name that a lot of people have talked about. I do think Travis Kelce is going to see an uptick in targets. But with Isaiah Pacheco being out, with that running back room kind of being in flux, I do believe Mahomes is going to be forced to toss the rock up, and Juju Smith-Schuster will be the guy coming down with the difference of targets that's left over. So once again, you got Justin Watson, stretches the field. He's the Hollywood Brown fill-in. He's going to get you 5-6 targets a game, you know, 3-4 catches, 5 catches on a good day. Xavier Worthy is going to be the guy who makes a big play every once in a while. He might get 6-8 targets. He might get 5-7 catches. Cool. Travis Kelce, he's going to be the guy who goes ahead and sees probably the largest uptick of targets with this injury. So Travis Kelce so far throughout this season hasn't really been impressive. He's actually been relatively disappointing. A lot of y'all drafted him in the first round. Or not. Hopefully you didn't draft him in the first round, but more so around like the second, third, fourth round territory. Up until this point, you probably have not been satisfied. Kelce through the season is the tight end 13, meaning he's not even a tight end 1 if you're playing a 12-team league. On the season, he has 15 catches in 4 games. He has 158 yards, no touchdowns. He's averaging essentially about 4 catches a game for about 40 yards a game. If you play in half PPR, he's getting you 6 points a game as a tight end. Juju Smith-Schuster, I believe, is going to pick up the, you know, the leftovers. Noah Gray will get involved as well. Sky Moore might get a couple catches here or there. But they brought in Juju. They paid him a little bit of money. He's 7 years into the league. He has experience with Mahomes in a Super Bowl run. He has history coming in, taking over for the number one wide receiver. I know up until this point, he hasn't been overly targeted. But Juju Smith-Schuster is someone that I'm investing into. I'm picking up on my rosters, and I think you should too. All right, and the next sleeper that we got up on the list is wide receiver for the New York Giants, Darius Slayton. Darius Slayton, I think, is going to have a pretty decent game this week. Don't be scared by the red highlighted defense that he's up against this week on sleeper. Seattle right now ranks 8th against passing offenses. Now, while that is relatively strong, while that's something that normally I would maybe advocate that you stay away from, with Malik Nabers out of the game, he's already been ruled out. With Devin Singletary also having been ruled out for the New York Giants this week, they don't really have too many options. So for better or for worse, Darius Slayton is going to get his opportunities. If they're winning, it'll be because Darius Slayton is contributing. And if they're losing, Darius Slayton's going to get his opportunity to catch a bunch of deep balls as they try to play catch up. Either which way the game flows, as a deep threat receiver, he will be involved. Now, when it comes to the Seahawks defense, once again, they rank 8th in the league. They average about 283 yards per game through the air. They average 283 yards per game in total, but they are the 7th best defense against the passing, game. In the passing game, they only allow 168 yards per game. The Seahawks defense only allows 168 yards per game. They had a game against the Lions last week where there was a lot of blown coverages. The Lions put up about 40 points. I don't know if Jared Goff had an incompletion. It was a special game for the Detroit Lions offense. A little bit different situation coming in this week with the New York Giants. They don't have Malik Nabers, who is leading the NFL in receptions right now. But it's still going to be a game in which I do believe the passing game is going to have to get active, for better or for worse. And, I mean, I think Darius Slayton's going to get some opportunities to get deep and potentially get some passes. One thing that is positive for the New York Giants offense this week is Byron Murphy the second. He's a defensive tackle, their star defensive tackle. Sounds like Byron Murphy may not play this week. Now, as a star defensive tackle on the defensive line, that's going to allow opportunities for Daniel Jones to step up in the pocket and make a deep throw. It's going to allow Daniel Jones the opportunity to sit back in the pocket and let someone like a Darius Slayton get down the field and let his route build up. I like Darius Slayton if you need a flex play this week. I think Darius Slayton will probably be good for minimum 4 catches. He averages around 12 yards a catch. May increase this week, especially if they get down by a lot. But if you do the math on that, I mean, you're talking about 50 yards in the game if he abides by his averages. And if he gets his 4 or 5 catches, you know, it'll be 7 to 8 points. It's a flex play. It's 7 to 8 points and a half PPR, but it's a pretty decent flex play. You could do worse. Pretty, like, strong floor, I guess. If he ends up catching a touchdown, he has a 14, 15 point game. And I can't say you can really be mad at that. I like Darius Slayton this week, even though he's up against a tough defense. I think for better or for worse, they're going to have to throw the ball down the field. And Darius Slayton will probably be the recipient of that. They're also going to have to stretch him down the field so Wandale Robinson can continue to eat and can continue to get those targets. He's been heavily targeted this year. And just as a construct of the offense, he'll be downfield early and often. I'm not sure if this next guy is necessarily a sleeper, but I got to give him a shout out. Dontayvion Wicks, wide receiver for the Green Bay Packers, is primed for a really big game this week. In week 4 against Minnesota after the Christian Watson injury, Dontayvion Wicks saw 13 targets from starting quarterback Jordan Love. Dontayvion Wicks and Jordan Love have a pretty strong history going back to last year and even this preseason. If you guys don't remember, Wicks and Love connected on that big 65-yard preseason touchdown. I think that was like one of Love's few touchdowns he was able to throw during the preseason. But that's just a reminder of how, you know, strong this connection can be. Dontayvion Wicks is probably one of the best separators in the NFL. I want to say he's probably top 20, top 25 separator at the wide receiver position. So he's going to create space when he plays the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams DBs are still younger. That whole defense is relatively young. They were all drafted within the last 2 years. I think Love and Wicks are going to connect a lot. Love trusts him. Once again, Wicks saw 13 targets in week 4 against Minnesota. He caught 5 of those targets, so you would like to see that number increase. But Wicks did come down with 2 touchdowns in week 4, and he ended the week as wide receiver 3. Dontayvion Wicks historically was taken in the 9th, maybe 10th round, possibly even the 11th round of a lot of your fantasy football drafts. And Romeo Doubs seems to be sitting out. And it sounds like he might be sitting out because he's unhappy with how often he's getting the football. So the Packers have listed him as doubtful for personal reasons. If there's no Romeo Doubs, if there's no Christian Watson, Dontayvion Wicks is going to be the starting receiver alongside Jaden Reed. And I think that's probably going to help him produce. He goes against the Los Angeles Rams. The Packers need a W. Wicks is going to get his opportunities, maybe even more opportunities with Doubs out. And I feel really, really confident in Wicks this week. I think he's an amazing DFS play as well. He's probably going to be the cheapest value DFS play. Someone who I really do trust this week to get a touchdown and to get a lot of opportunity, which includes a lot of yards. He goes up against the Rams passing defense, which isn't really much to write home about. I want to say the Rams have the 21st ranked pass defense, which he should be able to exploit. And truthfully, when you combine the separation, when you combine the amount of targets he's likely to get, I think he's going to torch the Rams secondary. Dontayvion Wicks is a very strong play for me this week. Joe Flacco is a steal at the quarterback position if you're in need. Joe Flacco last week stepped in for the Colts, and they had one of their best offensive performances of the 2024 season. Last week in the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, a pretty, you know, formidable defense, Flacco threw 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, went 16 out of 26 pass attempts, 168 yards, and he only played 80% of the snaps. This week, he plays one of the worst pass defenses in Jacksonville that's been getting shredded through the pass game by everyone they've played. We know how good Flacco was last year. He has a rocket for an arm. He's accurate. He processes defenses extremely well. And the Jacksonville Jaguars are 0-4. They have the worst record in the league, and that defense looks like shit. Joe Flacco this week, I think, is going to have a big game. I think he's a top 10 quarterback play. If he went 2 touchdowns, no picks, completing, you know, over 60% of his passes against the Pittsburgh Steelers and TJ Watt, I think he's going to put up numbers against the Jacksonville Jaguars, worst team in the NFL, one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL. And I think that in this divisional, you know, rivalry type of game, Shane Steichen's going to go ahead and draw up a game plan that's going to allow the Indianapolis Colts receivers to get involved and for Joe Flacco to use his veteran brain to go ahead and pick apart all of the weak spots. I got not only the Colts winning this game, but I got Joe Flacco as a top 10 quarterback play. And in a lot of leagues, he's actually still on waivers. Go pick him up if he's there. All right, and the final sleeper that I'm going to go ahead and talk about today is going to be the tight end for the New York Jets, in case you need a tight end sleeper. But that's going to be tight end Tyler Conklin. So the Minnesota Vikings is who the New York Jets play Saturday morning, 8:30 a.m. So make sure your lineups are set. But let's talk about the Vikings defense for a little bit, because they have been performing extremely well this year. The Vikings defense has an incredibly high sack rate. They have about 17 sacks through 4 games this season. The defense is extremely reliant on generating pressure. How do you generate pressure? You got to rush the quarterback. A lot of the Vikings defensive formations are, you know, they play like 2 deep safety coverages. So Flores will throw 2 deep safeties about 60-65% of the time, which helps them prevent deep passes. The Vikings also have a really high blitz rate. I believe it's about 40%, which is one of the highest blitz rates in the league, meaning they blitz almost half the time. That aggressive approach, it does create confusion for a lot of maybe younger quarterbacks, but Aaron Rodgers is not a young quarterback. He recognizes foreign coverages. He knows what he's looking at. He's not Brock Purdy. He's not Jordan Love. He's a guy who's been in the NFL for about 20 years, and this isn't going to throw him off all too much. He's going to know what they're doing out there on defense, and he knows what to look for. The Vikings defense has a habit of rushing about 3 defensive linemen, and they'll keep 4 linebackers, quote-unquote, in coverage. In most cases, they'll have 3 defensive linemen rush after the quarterback, and if they're blitzing, they'll have 2 of their 4 linebackers rush the quarterback. What that does is obviously it helps them generate pressure. They kind of sell out for the rush. I think with Aaron Rodgers and his ability to pick up defenses and recognize them relatively quickly, I think the Vikings are likely to blitz maybe an extra guy just to try to get home. That's just their approach. That's who they are. I think Tyler Conklin's going to go ahead and eat against this defense, because this will be a game in which Aaron Rodgers needs to distribute the ball quickly. Alan Lazard is a cool receiver. He's a top 25 receiver so far in fantasy this year, but he is very much a deep threat, right? He catches a lot of balls down the field. He can catch the intermediate routes, don't get me wrong, but his strong point is, you know, the 50-50 balls. Alan Lazard is like, I think he's like 6'4", 6'4", 6'5". This should be a game in which Gary Wilson has a good game, just because of his ability to run all different routes in the route tree. I think he's going to be great for those intermediate touches. But when I think about a blitz-heavy defense, I think of a safety valve, right? I believe Tyler Conklin is going to go ahead and get a fair amount of targets, a fair amount of receptions, even if they're not for a ton of yards. And if you're someone who just needs a streaming option, maybe you have Sam Laporta or someone like that on bye this week, I do believe that Tyler Conklin will go ahead and provide you a relatively stable floor. If he gets a touchdown, cool. I'm not predicting Tyler Conklin to go crazy and get you like 20 points or maybe not even 15. But if you just need somebody to go out there, get a decent amount of receptions, I could see him getting 5-6 receptions this week. You know, maybe he gets 10 yards a catch, 12 yards a catch, and he can put up a relatively nice day, especially for the tight end position where you really just don't have that many options. I think Tyler Conklin's a pretty decent play at tight end if you need someone to sub in because, hey, you might have a Sam Laporta or someone on bye this week. All right, and now it's time to go ahead and talk about players that might need to be dropped off your rosters. The first guy I'm going to talk about is the wide receiver from the San Francisco 49ers, and his name is Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk has been a terrible disappointment for most fantasy owners this year. He has 25 targets and only 13 catches. The biggest issue with that is that guys like Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Christian McCaffrey, they were out. This was the time in which Brandon Ayuk was supposed to eat. He had easier pass defensive matchups against the Rams, against the Patriots. He just has not capitalized. He's obviously still rusty from missing a lot of training camp. My issue with Brandon Ayuk isn't the talent. I think that maybe towards the end of the season he picks it up, so closer to playoff time. But we are going into week 5. A lot of y'all who drafted Brandon Ayuk aren't doing so well. And we're in a spot now to where Deebo Samuel's returning. George Kittle obviously is going to be on the up and up soon. I know he's kind of been out, or he's been questionable with that rib injury. Jordan Mason and his ability to run the rock and be one of the best rushers in the NFL, that doesn't help Brandon Ayuk because now this is just a run first team. Brock Purdy's distributing the ball extremely well. He's given the ball to Juwan Jennings and Deebo Samuel. Kittle when he's there. Mason's getting the rock and carries. There's just so many weapons that are getting the ball. Ricky Pearsall is eventually going to return to the lineup, and he'll get his opportunity as a rookie. I don't like the prospects for Brandon Ayuk. He's always kind of been like a perennial wide receiver too, but because of the offseason drama, because of his just rust, it doesn't look like things are going to get better anytime soon. I'm not saying that by the end of the season he won't maybe return to form, but if you're somebody who's in playoff contention already, right? If you're somebody who's on the cusp of making the playoffs if they were to start today, and granted, I know it's only week 5. If you're someone who needs to get some wins over the next month, he's not necessarily someone I'm relying on. So if you don't drop him, which I completely understand if you don't, he's got to at least hit the bench until he shows you something. It's been a pretty bad look. This happens a lot with players after they sign a big contract. They kind of go into slumps. Seems like Ayuk's kind of been affected by it. Once again, maybe he recovers at the end of the season, but things don't look good. And all of the role players who take away targets from him, they're getting healthy. They're coming back. And I don't know if he's going to be as involved within the offense, maybe as you predicted him to be. Mark Andrews has had a really tough season as well. He's seen a decrease in his target share this season. He's seen a lower catch rate this season. His yards per reception has decreased, so he's not really getting as many big plays. Isaiah Likely has obviously stepped up. The Ravens are running the ball more with Derrick Henry there. They're running a lot of options too with Lamar Jackson. Justice Hill is a major facet of the offense, which most of us did not predict. Mark Andrews, just for whatever reason, just does not seem to be getting it done. I think we might be seeing the end of Mark Andrews. Right now, he's tight end 41, which is really hard to do. Like, he's not even a tight end 3. He's tight end 41 through 4 games. Do you understand how bad that is? I don't know what's going on with him. I can't really put words to it, but he's not someone that I'm starting. He's not sniffing my lineup until he shows me something. If you dropped him, I really wouldn't be mad at you. The next few games are going to be tough too. He plays the Tampa Bay linebackers. He has the Cincinnati Bengals and Trey Hendrickson next week. He gets the Washington Commanders, who have been pretty strong against tight ends. And in week 8, he gets the Cleveland Browns defense. So the next 4 weeks are going to be tough. And his playoff schedule really isn't all that much better. In week 15, he gets the Giants, who are good against tight ends. Week 16, he gets TJ Watt and the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, which is great against tight ends. And week 17, he gets the Houston Texans, who are one of the best teams at defending against tight ends. Not only does his early part of the season look bad, but his playoff schedule looks horrendous. I'm not mad at you if you drop Mark Andrews. He at the very least, needs to be on your bench. It might be time to drop Trevor Lawrence. It's getting around that time. I'm giving it about 2 weeks, so this is just a pre-warning, I guess, to an extent. He should not be anywhere near your starting lineups. He's 0-4 throughout the season. Lawrence hasn't won any of the last 10 games. And with all of those losses, typically change follows. This season, his completion percentage is 53%, which is below the league average. He's having issues with accuracy and connecting with the receivers. I think the offensive issue that the Jaguars have is that they have three deep threat receivers starting in their lineup. Brian Thomas is a deep threat receiver. Christian Kirk is a deep threat receiver. Gabe Davis is a deep threat receiver. When you have three deep threat receivers, you need time for those routes to build up. You need an offensive line who can hold ground, who can keep the defensive line pressure away from you for at least 3 to 4 seconds while those guys run 15, 20, 25 plus yards downfield. Occasionally, you'll see Christian Kirk get like an intermediate route. Occasionally, you'll see, you know, Brian Thomas hit a curl route or something like that. But for the most part, all those guys' strengths are down the field. And with the way the offense is set up, Evan Engram was supposed to be kind of like that intermediate underneath option, right? Like, we were talking about Evan Engram potentially being tight end one coming into this season because of the amount of touches that he got last year. He was tight end two last season. He's been hurt since week one, so he has not been a part of the offense. There is talks about him potentially returning now in week five, which is why I want to give this offense about 2 weeks to see what's up. I do think he's probably the most integral part of the offense because they can't do anything in the short area without him. The offensive line is so bad that they can't build up those deep threat routes for their deep threat receivers. And the offensive line is also so bad that Travis Etienne, their starting running back, is struggling to get, you know, yards out of the backfield. Tank Bigsby has a couple, you know, explosive passes here or there, but it's pretty inconsistent. Right now, the Jaguars' offensive line has allowed 12 sacks on Lawrence, which obviously messes up the passing game. It puts pressure on T-Law. My gripe with Trevor Lawrence has always been that he's not a super fast processor. Like, the dude's tall. He has great hair. He's been a prodigy since he was in high school, which is cool. But for whatever reason, he just doesn't see the field really well. I believe he leads the NFL in turnovers since he entered the NFL as the number one overall draft pick. Once again, he leads the league in turnovers since he's entered the NFL, and that's under two different regimes, with the Urban Meyer regime and the newer Doug Peterson regime. I believe if the Jaguars go to, let's say, 0-6, meaning they lose this week and they lose the following, we might start seeing changes within the coaching department. We might start seeing changes on the offensive line. We might even start teetering on the line of, hey, are they going to have Mac Jones come in at some point? Trevor Lawrence hasn't won a game in his last 10 starts. I know they paid him big money. I know he's a household name. I know you guys might have some faith in him. But at a certain point, bro, like, Doug Peterson's playing for his job. At some point, you kind of got to see what you got. He's been inconsistent. He is, I want to say he's quarterback 18 this season so far. Not great. Not what you drafted him for. He's actually quarterback 22. It's bad, bro. He's not really even a QB. He's barely a QB2 in Superflex leagues. We'll see what happens. We're only four games deep. But, yeah, he's got to step it up, bro. He has Indianapolis in week five. He has the Chicago Bears defense, which is actually pretty good, in week six. And then he's got the Patriots in week seven. If he loses against the Patriots, who have one of the worst records in the league, still somehow better than the Jaguars. But if T-Law and those guys lose against the Patriots, that's going to be an embarrassment, and I think major changes are going to come. I'm unloading a lot of my Jaguars players outside of Evan Ingram. If there is a reason they get better, it will be because of Evan Ingram. He will be their catalyst. It's tough starting T-Law this year. I would get rid of him for whatever you can get at this point in time. Hey, big dog. I'm just here to tell you, you could probably drop Zamir White. He's been ruled out this week with a groin injury, but going back through the last 4 weeks, it's been pretty bad. He doesn't have a game this year in which he has more than 5.5 points if you play half PPR. He's inefficient on the ground. The Raiders lose a lot of games. The team is in turmoil. Roster's already starting to see turnover. Offensive line isn't great. Alexander Mattison's playing good enough to keep getting reps. And Dylan Lobby is, you know, in the background ready to go ahead and get its opportunity. Zamir White just doesn't provide enough upside. He's the type of back that needs to be on waivers. Shouldn't be in your roster. Shouldn't be in your flex spot. You don't really need me to tell you that. I'm just here to remind you. This is going to be controversial, and y'all go have some feelings towards me after I say this. I'm not mad at you if you drop Zay Flowers off your rosters. I'm not mad at you if you drop Zay Flowers off of your rosters. Let me explain. Zay Flowers up until this point is the wide receiver 50. I guess wide receiver 48. And he operates as the number one option on a passing offense. He's the number one option in Baltimore. He is the wide receiver one. And there's 47 other receivers who are outproducing him in fantasy football. The issue with Zay Flowers is that he doesn't see a lot of depth of target. Similar to like a Wandale Robinson, he might see a lot of targets. He might see a bunch of receptions. If you play in full PPR, I can understand why you might like him a little bit. But he doesn't really get deep in his targets, and he's not big enough to really get those yards after the catch. He doesn't break tackles, right? So you kind of rely on him getting a touchdown in order for him to place as like a top 20, top 25 receiver. It's bad, bro. I don't know if I'm dropping Zay Flowers just because of name value. You know, someone's going to go pick him up, obviously. There is going to be some interest from someone in your league. So maybe you don't drop him, but he's someone I'm not mad at you if you trade away. The upside is just so limited with the dude. Like, it's really limited, man. You're banking on games where he gets a touchdown. If he gets 10 catches for 67 yards, that's not going to do anything for you. You get 10, 11 points, and he's basically a flex play for you. You drafted him to be more than that. If you can get a game in the next 2 to 3 weeks, he plays the Bengals in week 5. He has 2 really good matchups with Washington in week 6 and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week 7. Keep in mind, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers just got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons offense on Thursday Night Football. I believe Darnell Mooney, Kyle Pitts, Drake London all had near 100 yards. The Washington Commanders defense is not good either. They get shredded damn near every week. And the Bengals, he's likely to have a decent game in one of those 3 weeks. He's not someone who's going to carry you to a championship this year. Last year, he did so because you were able to get him at a much cheaper ADP. So there was more value there to be found. This year, his ADP was bolstered. It was boosted. You had to pay a lot more of a premium dollar to get him on your roster. And it's just not worth the payout. In the playoffs, he gets the Giants. He gets the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he gets the Houston Texans. That'll be interesting. The biggest reason I'm kind of off of Zay Flowers, though, is because of the emergence of Derrick Henry. This is a run-first offense. Keep that in mind. They run the ball heavy, early, and often. They play a lot of heavy sets on offense. And they're just not really interested in tossing the ball up too often. If they do toss the ball, it's going to be spread out. Zay just doesn't get a lot of yards after the catch. Doesn't get downfield often enough for my liking. And while he was a value last year because his ADP was so low as a rookie, this year with where his ADP was, with where you drafted him, his results are not up to par. And if you are a team that drafted him and maybe, you know, the 4th round, the 5th round, 6th round, it's tough to explain why he's starting in your roster as your wide receiver two, your wide receiver one, your wide shit, even your wide receiver three is kind of nasty. I'm not saying drop him, but I'm saying that he should get off your roster if you have real championship aspirations, right? Because when you get to the playoffs, you're playing the best of the best teams. You got to win three games against the best teams in your league. Dude in your starting lineup isn't really going to get it done. And unless you were able to go out there and get someone on waivers like a Juwan Jennings who went off, unless you were able to go out there and get someone on waivers like Dontavian Wicks, who's probably going to be in for a big increase in, you know, targets and catches and all those type of things. Unless you got a steal on the waiver wire at wide receiver, bro, I'm trading Zay Flowers. Maybe I'll package him up with someone else, and I'm going to go out there and get at least a wide receiver two in return, right? So when I say wide receiver two, we're talking about dudes the likes of maybe like Terry McLaurin, who I think is going to get better as the season progresses. I had Terry as a top 10 play simply because Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback he's ever had. He's going to start seeing more targets. Cliff Kingsbury loves to throw the ball, and that Washington Commanders offense is extremely efficient. I think they've punted once or twice since week one. Another guy I wouldn't be mad at you trading for, shit, Deontay Johnson. Andy Dalton's a major upgrade from Bryce Young, and I don't see that changing anytime soon unless Andy Dalton gets hurt. Deontay Johnson is like an upgraded version of Zay Flowers. Except for somehow, some way, he actually gets more yards after the catch, and he gets a deeper average depth of target. His last two games with Andy Dalton, he's averaging about 13 yards per catch, which is pretty damn good, especially when you compare that to Zay Flowers, who over his last two games is averaging about 8 yards per catch. We're talking about an extra 5 yards per catch. That's pretty strong. I'm not saying drop Zay Flowers, but you can do better, especially with where you had to draft him this year. Package him up with someone. Say goodbye. You might have had a good run with the kid last year because his ADP was stupid low, but you had to pay a pretty penny, and that penny is not getting the same value, right? Go ahead and package the dude up. He has some name value. You'll be able to go ahead and get a wide receiver too who will be a little bit more consistent. Just package him up with like a RB3 or some shit like that and move on with your life. And the last guy who I have on my drop list this week is going to be quarterback for the Los Angeles Chargers, Justin Herbert. The receivers aren't there this year. It's pretty spotty in that receiver room. Harbaugh is obviously implementing a run first, you know, type of offense. Not a lot of passing opportunities. This isn't the same offense, you know, from a couple years ago with Staley. There is no Keenan Allen. There is no more Mike Williams. There is no more Gerald Everett. No more Austin Eckler. You're working with Ladd McConkey, Quentin Johnston, maybe Josh Palmer when he gets back, and Gus Edwards. J.K. Dobbins occasionally. The talent's just not there. He's not going to be a QB1 this year. The team's still winning with the current method they're using, which is, you know, they play a physical brand of football, and when you win with that type of football, you continue to play that type of football. I don't see Justin Herbert going back to his 5,000-yard seasons that he had under Staley, who was extremely aggressive. I don't see him going back to his tendencies that he had under Kellen Moore, who loves to throw the ball. This is a new day. This is a new Justin Herbert. You can drop the dude. You have better options on the waiver wire. Those are my sleepers. Those are my drops for this week. Let me know what you guys think. Tweet us at the Gumbo Pod. But good luck this week. Go ahead and listen to the other episode that Dugo dropped, which is he did a game by game analysis for all of the week 5 games. You can find it in the episode below this. But until we meet again, my name is Ja. This is Fantasy Football with Gumbo. We thank you for listening. Please subscribe. Peace.